AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The grain markets were handed around of, generally price negative reports from USDA, but they took the changes in stride with prices easing back a bit from yesterday's close. The cattle complex erased morning losses to close higher, with buyers coming back into the hog market.
Live from perhaps a pending porcine panacea via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Ed Usett from the University of Minnesota. Directly following the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, it's nice to see some strength in the livestock market. I don't know if it's a porcine panacea, but...
No pending porcine panacea?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Maybe? Mm-hmm. Maybe? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. That seems like a lot.
Well, maybe I overstated it a little bit. You know? What I was really thinking about when I was typing panacea, I almost typed pancetta, you know?
You said more like panacea, and I heard pancetta.
That's because you're using the other side of the brain today.
That's the good side. That's right. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Report day. Ed Usett is going to be along. We're going to have a conversation about some of the changes. And you know what? It's not as a benign round of supply and demand updates as I think the market expected. Ooh. Got an increase on the bean carryover estimate. A little bigger than expected increase on the wheat carryover estimate. Corn carryover down, but not down as much as what the trade expected. So there's a lot of subtleties that we need to work through on this and try to figure out exactly what it means. Plus, we got to go through the global numbers, the South American crop estimates. Not a lot of change there from USDA.
Oh, really?
Even though you get outside of USDA, and everybody's changing their outlook for the South American estimates. USDA is just kind of holding in there steady. So we got a lot of ground to cover today.
We do.
Yeah, let's get started.
Wheat futures generally opened at near session highs and posted a low range close. USDA increased wheat ending stocks for the 23-24 marketing year to 698 million bushels. That's up 25 million bushels from last month and 8 million bushels above the average pre-report trade estimate. Global wheat carryover was adjusted downward 560,000 metric tons from last month and is down 12.7 million tons year on year. Export sales of wheat in the week ended April 4 totaled nearly 81,000 metric tons, in line with pathetic trade expectations. Yeah. July HRW wheat futures 9.25 cents lower, 578.5. July SRW wheat down 7.25 to 566.25. July spring wheat closed at 645.25, down 13.75 cents, Chip.
Starting to stretch things out to the downside here a little bit in the wheat market, getting back down to some important support levels. So need to keep track of what's happening here.
Corn carryover for 23-24 at 2.122 billion bushels is down 50 million bushels from last month, but was 20 million bushels above the average pre-report trade estimate. Global corn carryover was cut 1.4 million metric tons from last month, but is still up 16.1 million from year ago. Yeah. USDA cut its Argentine corn crop estimate 1 million metric tons from March, but left its Brazilian corn crop estimate steady with last month. Export sales of corn weekend at April 4 of nearly 326,000 metric tons were down sharply from the four-week average and fell well short of trade expectations. May corn closed near session lows and below 430 for the first time since April 2nd. May corn futures 5.5 cents lower, 428.75. July corn down 4.75, 441. December corn futures closed at 466, down 4.25 cents. What's so funny over there?
I felt like you were starting to pile on a little bit there with the with the negative stuff.
I don't make the news. I just read it, brother.
You know what I mean? It? You know, and hey, carry over down 50 million bushels from last month. That's a positive. The problem is the traders were looking for carryover to be down 70 million bushels. So all in all, not that price supportive of a day.
Export sales of soybeans weekend at April 4 totaled just over 305,000 metric tons, and that was in line with trade expectations. In the supply and demand update, USDA pushed 23-24 bean carryover to 340 million bushels, up 25 million bushels from last month, and 23 million bushels above trade expectations. Global soybean carryover was down very slightly from last month and is up 12.9 million metric tons from a year ago. May beans posted a high range open and a mid-range close. The close, the lowest since March 6. May beans 5.5 cents lower today, 11.59 and a quarter. July beans down 5.5, 11.72 and a half. November beans closed at 11.64 and a quarter, down a nickel on the day.
You know, we've been talking about this export situation on soybeans for quite some time and trying to figure out whether or not the pace was strong enough to hold the export estimate steady through, you know, into the summer marketing, and it wasn't. That's the bottom line. USDA took 20 million bushels off the export estimate, down to 1.7 billion bushels now. So hopefully that is low enough to at least get us into the summer months so we can take a look at what the export demand might be later in the marketing year.
Cotton carryover for 23-24 at 2.5 million barrels is unchanged from last month. Cotton export sales weekend at April 4 totaled 81,500 bales, down 10% from the four-week average. July cotton today was 182 points lower at 85.25. Looks like we've got Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures, Chip.
Thank you. Let's make the jump over there. Thank you, Davis. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. It feels a little bit like spring. We've got the Masters on, so not a lot to complain about today.
There you go. Grain market's lower today, but it felt like it could have been even worse. It sure doesn't feel like they piled on with what were some negative reports, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the chart, the release of the report, I mean, outside of soybeans, if you just look at the corn market, you wouldn't even know that there was a report. You know, we barely moved after the numbers were released, and then there just wasn't anything bullish there to excite new longs or spook the shorts. And so we just kind of bled lower into the afternoon. We're kind of treading water on some significant support for July corn near 440. Breaking close below that, you know, unfortunately, probably opens the door for additional technical selling. But I don't know that it's going to roll out of bed. You know, it is that time of year where we do see a little bit more of a range bound and a choppy trade and potentially some premium coming to the market. So, it was a snooze fest of a report, in all honesty, the way I saw it. So, I mean, that's pretty typical for the April report. So,
right. So going forward, it's all about planning progress now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of what we've been talking about all week. Is everyone likes to talk about these USDA reports. It's fun and exciting, gives us something to look forward to and talk about. But on the heels of the prospective planting, the quarterly stocks report, this really doesn't register relative to that. And the market trades it for a few minutes, and then it's on to weather in the Midwest and planting progress. And I think that's going to be the main conversation here going forward over the next several weeks.
Gotcha. Who do you like in the Masters?
Oh, man, I've got so many different pools going. I don't know, up from down.
Just here to enjoy it. Just here for the show.
I'm a Brooks Koepka fan. I know he's got a lot of haters, but I like his swagger.
Hey, I like Brooks' swagger, too. I like it. All right. Thanks, Oliver. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk. I'm wearing stretch blue jeans right now.
Are you really?
You better believe it.
You feeling good about that choice?
Oh, feeling so good. So
Amen.
Good.
Yeah. Nice. Like it. I like it. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Hello.
Yeah, we had USDA reports, and here to talk about the details of the reports, what it might mean for the market outlook going forward, is Ed Husett. He is a University of Minnesota Extension Crops Marketing Specialist, and Ed joins us right now. How you doing, Ed? It's good to talk with you again.
Chip, it's good to talk to you. I'm doing great.
Fantastic, fantastic. Glad you're here. Okay, well, let's just kind of start with the wheat market and with some of the changes that we saw there. As you dig into that supply and demand report, we got the a bigger carryover estimate than what we had the previous month. But what did you make of the supply and demand report? Anything really jump out?
Oh, boy. Up and down that report, a lot of sort of leaning bearish the whole way. In fact, not only on wheat, but on beans and corn. Wheat probably got away the best of all. The funny thing about this report, if there's anything funny about a WASDE report, usually you look for, okay, that tilts a little bearish, that tilts a little bearish, and you look for the thing that tilts bullish, and I'm still looking, Chip. I haven't found it. The wheat market, we did, they adjusted the feed and residual number down 30 million bushels, probably a little more than expected, but of course they increased it on the corn side.
Right. Right. 90 million bushels feed and residual number on wheat, Ed. That's about as bare bones as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the wheat that's fed in our country is typically off grade, something poor quality, and it depends on that wheat corn ratio, and it is bad. Corn prices have come down quite a bit, so have wheat prices, and it still favors corn.
Yep. Yep. I think I might know what the silver lining is on the wheat numbers. I'll run it by you and see what you think. Look at the global carryover numbers. Month to month, down 560,000 metric tons from last month, and we're still down 12.7 million tons from year ago. So month to month, year to year, the trend in wheat carries in the right direction.
Yes, and in fact, if you take China out of the world picture, yes, which you really need to do, because China's been on this program of building wheat stocks. They're still very concerned about famine and preparing for that type of scenario. You take them out of the picture, and the supply and demand situation on wheat worldwide is it's tight by any measure if you go back 10, 20 years.
Right.
And we don't see it here right now, Chip, because we've got such a good hard red winter wheat crop on the way, or at least compared to a year ago. So we're on the rebound production-wise. We're going to have a few more acres of spring wheat.
Okay.
And but you take a worldwide look at wheat, the only thing holding this together, I swear the only thing holding it together, is Russia.
Okay.
And the fact that they've had 10 to 12 years of good to great wheat crops. That's odd. They're just like Canada, North Dakota, Kansas. They can lay an egg on wheat production now and again, but you have to go back to 2012 for their last bad crop. They're overdue. There's another one, good one coming. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And they've stepped into the breach with this whole war thing going on, and they've been able, they're the leading exporter. They are sending wheat to poor African countries, poor countries in Southeast Asia, and they're keeping the bulls at bay doing that.
That's crazy. You know, they're using it. They're using their wheat crops to generate some revenue for their war effort. There's no question about that. But they're also, as you just stated, building relationships with some of the countries that I think the U.S. would like to be building relationships with at the same time. It's they're eating our lunch on wheat right now, aren't they?
Yeah. They're sort of presenting themselves as heroes on the food side of the equation to a lot of those poor countries.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And then at the same time, Ed, you look at different headlines that come out of Russia or Ukraine, and you think, well, now wait, that could have a long-term positive impact or even a negative impact on the wheat price outlook, and it doesn't have any impact on the wheat price.
Yeah,
I think it's just because traders are tired of talking about it.
Yes, yeah. We had this bullish scenario built up when the war broke out, and every bad scenario we wanted to come up with there just hasn't come out, just hasn't come true.
Okay, what about Australia? Is there anything out of Australia that you look at and say, all right, that might help us out?
Well, I think they're looking forward to a decent crop. I don't see, but is it Australia that is impacted by La Nina?
Yeah.
And La Nina's gone, so I think they're probably in pretty good shape for what we'd consider something bordering a normal wheat crop.
You know, and then we look at the big importing or big wheat usage countries around the world. I'm looking at China, I'm looking at India. And China just took us through a roller coaster.
Yes.
Of wheat buys followed up with cancellation of those purchases. What was going on there?
You know what, Chip? Figuring out what China is doing and why and the timing of it is above my pay grade, as they say. I can't figure it out. I do know that cancellations are not a good thing. If we want to turn these markets around, not just wheat, but corn and soybeans, we have to see it on the demand side, and it's not there.
Yeah. Dang. So not enough negative attitude out there to bring spring wheat acres down?
No. In fact, the surprising thing my backyard is Minnesota. We had the planting intentions report come out. Pretty amazing. This is very inside baseball for Minnesota, but we're projected to lose 700,000 acres of corn. That's a lot of acres out of Minnesota. And I'm like, well, what are we replacing it with? We've got apparently 150,000 more acres of soybeans, 100,000 more acres of hay, 300,000 more acres of wheat. And I'm like, I didn't know the wheat market was that good. And yet, talking to a few people, you know, wheat is, if input costs get expensive, it's cheap to put in.
Yep. And it seems like guys up in the wheat growing areas of Minnesota, they like it in there for a rotation crop just to break things up from time to time too, don't they?
Yes, they do. In fact, as a former wheat buyer for flour mills, it always breaks my heart to know how poor the enthusiasm is for growing wheat. They don't like growing wheat, and everyone who grows wheat does it for another reason.
they and it's complains good for about the, it the whole time.
Absolutely. They'll tell me, well, I hate wheat, but I need the straw. It'll increase my corn yields by 20 bushels next year. It's every reason under the sun, except I like growing wheat.
Yep. Dang. So here we are. We're kind of stuck with this wheat market, and you look at the seasonals or the longer term cycles in wheat, and there's really not a lot of reason to bust this thing out of the doldrums that we're in right now either, is there?
No, there isn't. No, there isn't. We're coming in that time of year. Where Kansas has turned the corner in a big way from a year ago. Much of the hard red winter wheat belt is just looking much better. It's hard to it's hard to take the that the biggest story in the last year has been we're at 50-year lows on wheat exports. So supply's looking good. Demand hasn't been good the whole year. Should we be surprised that we drift lower?
Right. I guess not. I guess we probably should not be. All right. So USDA for 2023-24 put the wheat carryover at 698 million bushels. That was up from 673 million bushels in March. And we were up, more than 200 million bushels. Excuse me, up more than 100 million bushels from the 2022-23 year. Real quick on corn, 2.122 billion bushels, down from 2.172 billion bushels in March, but that was still 20 million bushels above trade expectations. Then on soybeans, 340 million bushels, up from 315 million bushels in March. Ed and I will go through some of the details of the corn and soybean balance sheet next here on AgriTalk.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes. For July, HRW wheat futures were 9 1/4 cents lower, 578.5. July SRW wheat down 7 1/4 to 566.25. May corn futures were 5 1/2 cents lower, 428.75. December corn futures closed at 466, down 4 1/4 cents. May beans were 5.5 cents lower, 1159.25. November beans closed at 1164.25. That's down a nickel today. July cotton today was 182 points lower at 85.25. On your livestocks, June fat cattle, $1.05 higher, 173.90. October futures up 50 cents, 174.57.5. And May feeder futures, $1.62.5 higher, 238.15. And on the snout side, June lean hogs up 25 cents, 105.80. Go to tryprofarmer.com for more.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
We are in the middle of a conversation with Ed Youssef, University of Minnesota Extension Crops Marketing Specialist. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Ed, I'm going over the notes. And kind of replaying some of the conversation, a real quick what if for you, okay?
Okay.
What if Russia has a poor crop? How does that change the wheat market?
Oh, I think it changes it. I think we take a whole fresh look at these numbers and we realize that wheat stocks worldwide are not that they're certainly not that at a comfortable level. We'd take a whole new look at this. This is the question that's been rolling through my mind for a year now. What if Russia has a bad crop? And yet, Chip, even as I say that right now, they're expected to have another pretty good one.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And but if I can look out a year from now, if they have a bad crop, Yeah, I'm a wheat guy. I used to be a wheat buyer. I think a lot about wheat. Wheat can lead this market out of the doldrums.
Yep.
If in fact it turns that way, but we have to emphasize right now, it looks like Russia's going to do it again and have another good crop.
Yep. You know, wheat to me, you've got to have participation from wheat in both directions, up and down, or corn and soybeans. You don't see as much movement as what you might expect. So wheat can be an anchor, or wheat can kind of propel things along too. So I think you're very much right on this. You got to have wheat's participation if we're going to see some kind of a recovery in here.
Yep.
So, okay. Let's go on to corn. Okay. like I said, 2. I want to make sure I got to have the numbers in front of me. 2.122 billion bushels. That was down 50 million bushels from March. They took 25 million out of the, excuse me, they added 25 million bushels to the feed and residual and to the food, seed, and industrial with all of that going to corn for ethanol production. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And the numbers were actually modestly disappointing. I think I think the market had hopes that ethanol forecast that was, you know, they bumped it by 25 million bushels. I think there were people thinking that maybe it should be 50 million bushels. Yeah. And even the feed and residual raised by 25 million bushels. I think there were people out there thinking 50 million bushels or 100 million bushels, jeez, something better. So the good news was not all that good because we had higher expectations.
Ed, you're saying things that are getting me thinking that we're going to get awfully close to 2 billion bushels by the time things are said and done.
We could. Okay. We could. And I also happen to think that the market's got some sort of magical thinking about this 2 billion bushel mark, sort of like it's 98.6 degrees for our normal temperature. And the corn market grows every year, and 2 billion bushels is not what it was 5 years ago. So I don't want to get too hung up on that one number.
Okay. All right. But you look at the stocks to use ratio, and here we are sitting at like 15% right now, or maybe it's not even 15%. I didn't do the math after today.
Mm-hmm.
But it's bumping up against 15%. That doesn't feel like a positive stocks to use ratio to me.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. But it's not a burdensome level either.
Okay.
But lacking, you know, the markets, if lacking good news on the demand side, markets will find a way they just drift lower. That's what they do. If you don't give them fresh news, and particularly on the demand side, they find a way to drift lower.
Well, and Ed, I don't know. I'm trying to recall a year in which the funds were as comfortable on the short side of the market in the middle of April as they are this year. And I don't think I can recall it. I don't think I can find it.
Boy, you bring up a great point there. I mean, to be this short at this time of year, this is the time of year where I tell people we have to have hope. You know, April, May, June, I call it, Chip, I like to call this time of year the 2-2 season, where, because it's all about planting, and this year we're too early, and next year we're too late, this year we're too wet, then another year we're too dry, we're too hot, we're too cold. We get anxiety about planting season and somehow find a rally, usually, not always. And you're right, you bring up a great point. What are they doing hanging out there short? They must be just damn confident that this is going to go well.
Yeah, you know, this is the time of the year where I'm always the guy that preaches be there before the market gets there. In other words, have some price orders in above the market at a price level that you find acceptable, so that if the market gets there an overnight trade and you're sleeping, or maybe you've had a couple too many that night and you lose track, it doesn't matter because you're already there before the market got there.
Yep.
Dude, I don't know if the market's even thinking about going there this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. We are searching for a catalyst. And today's report certainly didn't give us anything, but
no.
You know, it's April 11th. We've got we've got 2.5 months, I believe, in front of us to find a good story. I don't know if we will.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. Well, it's not like it was a knock them down, drag them out kind of negative report for the corn market, because we did get those increases in usage. And as you said, we may have some room to continue to grow those usage categories going forward. What about on soybeans? USDA increased carry over 25 million. They cut total supplies by 5 million by cutting into imports, and then made several other cuts. But the big cut was a 20 million bushel cut to the export number. Does that make sense to you?
I think it does. I think it does. And maybe we breathe a sigh of relief that they didn't cut it by more. I think many of the adjustments we saw today in corn and in soybeans, they're modest adjustments, and very much in the way I have a bias that USDA, they take it slow. You know, they'll cut it a bit or add a little bit this month, cut a bit this month, and wait for more evidence before they cut or add some more. And this would be right in line with that. They were pretty modest on that export cut. And unfortunately, it could grow. I mean, they could cut it again in the next report.
Okay. All right. So then you throw on top of all of this, everybody's looking at those South American estimates, Brazil soybeans and Brazil corn in particular, and we just don't get, we don't see movement there.
No change at all.
From USDA.
They didn't do a thing. Yes, they didn't do a thing. And maybe we should think of this as our own corn crop from a year ago and soybean crop. We had biases that the crop was going to be bad, it was going to be a poor yield, and so on. In the end, we ended up with a record yield. And maybe USDA is a little leery about, you know, let's not kill this crop. But we've had surprises on the upside before. Maybe just cool it a bit and let's see how when we have more evidence.
You know, that you're exactly right in what you just said. But when we wrapped up with Crop Tour last year, third week of August, Pro Farmer put out a record national average corn yield.
Mm-hmm.
And all people remember is that, boy, Pro Farmer was really, really low on last year's crop estimate. Well, yes, Pro Farmer was low, but it was projecting a record yield a year ago on corn. And the point I'm making there is all about perceptions.
Yeah.
And we are under the perception right now. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Ed, but based on everything that I've heard you say today, it seems to me like you want to be marketing 2024 crop corn and soybeans like there's going to be another record yield on corn.
Oh, you raise an issue I'm thinking awfully hard about, because right now, if you look at new crop bids, you know, forward contract, wherever you are in the corn belt, you're looking at a price that probably doesn't beat your production costs. I mean, this is not a good time. I know in Minnesota, if you look at forward contract values on corn and soybeans, you're at least 50 cents away from a break-even cost of production, maybe even a dollar a bushel in the case of soybeans. And yet, I wonder if we shouldn't be, if we can find any sort of a modest rally here. I think a person's got to swallow hard and get something on the books. And because, you know, Chip, sometimes you maximize profits and sometimes you minimize the loss. Mm-hmm. And if you see a chance to lock something in at a modest loss, or at least what pencils out as a modest loss, you got to get something on the books, because it could be a lot. If we get a bumper crop this year, it could get very ugly by harvest.
Yep, I hear you. And you're doing that with the idea that you're going to have APH. Well, you can produce a little bit more than that, increase your average revenue, increase and reduce your cost of production with a better yield. But boy, you're just you're right, Ed. It's a year that's going to be filled with some tough decisions. So, hey, man, great conversation. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me on, Chip. I appreciate it.
Ed Usett, Crops Marketing Specialist through the Extension Service there at the University of Minnesota.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation. And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here with Chip Flory.
Yep.
Let's see. Where to begin? Where to begin? Let's go here. Let's go here. A little cleanup. Okay. Cleanup in aisle five. Beef export sales weekended April 4, 13,600 metric tons, slightly ahead of the four-week average. But let's go over to the hogs here, Chip. Pork export sales, 47,400 metric tons, one-third above the four-week average. So maybe not a pending porcine panacea, but not a hogpocalypse either, certainly.
Porkopalypse.
Porkopolis. That's hard to say.
It is. I can't say it.
Yeah.
I just it and I can't say it.
Yeah. No, you did it once. We got it on tape. Joe, did you get that? I think Joe got it.
A porkalypse.
Big Apple with the win. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have some exciting news that I'm not going to tell anybody about. But yesterday. I was working on a really, really cool project with some really talented people from the Farm Journal staff.
Okay.
There will be conversation. There will be interesting topics. There will be nonsense. And there will be music. I'm going to leave it right there. More to come.
Wait.
No?
Huh? Aren't you talking about tomorrow morning's AgriTalk?
I'm afraid not. No. In fact, I won't even be around. I'm flying the coop, brother. I'm out.
You are. That's right.
I'm like 8 minutes away from vacation right now.
Very cool.
I'll be back Wednesday next week. Nice long weekend.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a beautiful weekend, it looks like.
I can't wait. I absolutely can't wait. Yeah.
Yep.
Half of me is already there.
Hey, there was some breaking news that came out just before the the show started. Can I do that quick?
Yeah, jump in there.
All right. The South Dakota Department of Agriculture and the Animal Industry Board have received confirmation from the United States Department of Agriculture, National Veterinary Services Laboratory, of the detection of highly pathogenic avian influenza in a dairy cattle herd in South Dakota. It was also found in a herd in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
South Dakota
brings us to 8 states. Is that right?
I think at least.
I think North Carolina was 7, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's right, Davis. Mm-hmm. I think that's right. So this is, as they continue to look for it and continue to search for it, and now that the symptoms are known the detections down in Texas, New Mexico, Kansas, to begin with. Now that the symptoms are known, they know what they're looking for.
Yeah.
The more you test,
sure.
What's going to happen?
Sure.
The more you're going to find.
You find more. Yeah. Interesting there. I noticed the nomenclature at the beginning of that release.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything to be read into that or not, but they're going with
Avian.
No,
there is. Yeah. There is something to be read into it because it is something that I hesitate to mention, but it's real. Aphis has not evidently has not accepted the bovine practitioner's relabeling of this virus to Aphis. What is it again?
BF, bovine, something IAV, I can't remember, virus, something.
Yeah, right. But they haven't changed it up. It's still the high path avian influenza in this dairy herd.
Right, they didn't add the bovine, basically.
Right.
And when you refer to aphis, for when you refer to aphis, it's the what's the A? Animal, Plant, and Health Inspection Service. Did I get that right?
Right.
And that's a branch of USDA, so it's federal.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you got to have consensus.
Mm.
I think the bovine practitioners are doing the right thing in relabeling this virus so that it does uniquely identify the virus as being in bovine.
Mm-hmm.
Because the virus in a bovine host is not the same thing as the virus in a bird host. I mean, if the virus gets in a bird, the bird's dead. All right? So let's speed the process up and contain the virus by depopulating a flock. The bovines are recovering and getting back to normal is what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So it deserves a different label, and why there's got to be a reason that aphis is dragging their feet on this, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Interesting. You ever tried to milk a turkey? It's not
just
gonna happen.
Just that one time?
Okay. Well, I mean, everybody's got to try it once, right?
That's not what Dad said.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The takeaway from Ed Usage from University of Minnesota. Dude, I've almost got two full pages of notes here. I'm going to just boil it down.
One.
Maximize profits, minimize loss. Sometimes you can do one. Sometimes you got to do the other. It's just reality.
Yeah, it is. It's absolute reality. And we've been warning about that and talking about that for quite some time. And here it comes. I you know, if we get through this planting season without any of the tutus that Ed was talking about.
Too hot, too wet, too this, too that.
Right. Then this market's going to be set up for some pressure into the summer months. And if everything's looking good this year, or at least even through the first half of the year, it's going to be really difficult to mount much of a rally in any of the markets here.
Yeah.
All right. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook, April 17th through the 21st. Below normal temperatures. Heads up, a change there. Below normal temperatures, Minnesota, Northwest Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Western Kansas. Near normal temperatures expected through most of Wisconsin and Iowa. Above normal temperatures, most of Missouri, Illinois, and parts to the east of that. Above normal precipitation expected Wisconsin, eastern Iowa, Missouri, and points to the east of that. Near normal precip west of that I-380 line there in Iowa. Thank you so much for listening this afternoon. Sure appreciate it. Come back tomorrow morning. We've got a free-for-all coming your way.